Tevin Campbell was a young up-and-coming artist back then in the 1990s, proving his musical range, especially with this Curtis Mayfield classic, Keep On Pushing. This was in 1994. He did a tribute to the great Curtis Mayfield, and this was on the album. It's titled Tribute to Curtis Mayfield. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And what can I tell you? A lot to talk about. Where do we start? Well, we start with the death of Elijah Cummings, the cantankerous congressman from Maryland, who earned a reputation for aggressively representing his congressional district and supporting progressive causes. He died early this morning at the age of 68. Now, I have one little memory in particular of Elijah Cummings. I was a reporter at the time, and he didn't have much patience for people asking him questions or what he believed to be nonsensical questions. I hate to think that my questions were nonsensical, but that's the way he was. If he didn't like something, it was nonsensical or irrelevant or something like that. But this had to do with the Congressional Black Caucus, and he, of course, he was very active in it. And he let me have it. But he didn't expect that I would let him have it back. And after I delivered my little sermonette to him, I left the room. Only to get a phone call later of a great apology for his rudeness. He said he was sorry, he was having a bad day, he was on edge. And now would we revisit the question? And he had more time to talk, he's more relaxed now, he says. So it worked out fine. But you know, in this business, sometimes you have to be very insistent that you not be dismissed. You're doing your job, as is everybody else. And the last thing, the very last thing you want to do to me is to shout. That is all bets are off after that. But we didn't have much contact after that. But every time we did see each other in these various venues, he was exceedingly accommodating, very nice, and it was a kind of joke. It turned out to be a thing that we both laughed at, and then we got on to business. If you're from Baltimore or anywhere in Maryland and would like to say a few words, please do call in 888-874-4888. It was not said by his office what exactly caused his death. The statement issued by his office only said that he had been suffering with health problems for quite some time. And well, eventually it claimed his life. But I would say this, there's no question about his devotion to his district and beyond his district. He got involved in many issues that he could just have allowed to pass him by, and he didn't. He got involved. And a very courageous man, in that he brooked no folly. He said what he had to say. And whether it was to a president or to a regular person on the street, you would have no question as to where he stood on issues. He was also very, very responsible in a leadership capacity in many areas. But he was a fighter for his district and even got involved in matters overseas, like apartheid and other issues. And so the world is less of a world today with him not in it. And in Baltimore, somebody looking to replace him had better first get a proper measure of the man and see what they have to live up to. I'm sure his district mourns his loss greatly. Well, I wanted to talk also about the great standoff between Trump and the, and now Nancy Pelosi's turn. It seems to be the Nancy Pelosi Donald Trump standoff. No one is yielding because it's that kind of a fight. You yield, you lose. So she's standing firm on her ground and he's standing firm on his. And there is a gap 400 miles wide between them. This raises a very serious question. There's no doubt now that the country is in crisis. The president of the country, Donald J. Trump, has been served notice many times in the recent weeks that he is president in name only. And soon, even that may vanish. There's a lot of fighting going on, and there's no way to really stop it. They can't just stop it. It has to be resolved in a court of law. It's now a legal matter, and they just can't stop this ball that's rolling. The thing is, however it turns out and however it's going, we're losing. We, the people, are losing. That's for sure. And no one has a fix for it. How do the people get through this war between the Democratic Party and now the Republican Party? Elements of the Republican Party have joined the fight, and they themselves are startled that they have to join this fight and take these various positions that would seem to be contrary to what Donald Trump will have them say and do. But little by little, the Republican Party and elements within it are showing that it matters to them what becomes of the country under, and especially under, Republican leadership. You know, you could cover for a guy only so much. You give him room for 10 mistakes. But on mistake 11, you better know where you stand. Because by mistake 11, as you add up the tally, you see elements of outright thievery, betrayal, lawlessness. You're seeing nepotism. You're seeing all kinds of things you did not imagine that the upright Republican Party countenancing, let alone practicing. The Republican Party, quite as it is, there are elements within the party that are completely shattered by this president and his conduct and his lying, his overall behavior, his unfitness for the job. They are totally, they've gone beyond the point of embarrassment. They're now very angry. And in a way, they deserve it because this is the party that always had its nose in the air, that always, you know, carried itself as a party with good breeding. People who went to good schools and universities. They're conservative people, they're God-fearing and all of that stuff. And here we are with their president. This is their candidate. And they did everything to defend him. And it turns out that he is beyond defending. He cannot be defended because he's done so many things wrong and deliberately wrong that shatter the notion of honesty and forthrightness and the party of all the people and all that nonsense. This is not, this is a man who is off the rails. Remember, I said it. I said it days into his presidency that there was something wrong with this man. And it took a while for people to begin to see, yeah, well, there's something wrong. Even psychiatrists and psychologists and behaviorists and all the ists you can find out there, they took note of the president's erratic behavior, his constant contradictions, his swaying way over to one side 1 minute and way over to the other side 1 minute, his obnoxious behavior, his callousness. And only now has it reached a pitch where, well, nobody can deny that they see problems with the president. And it's now gone beyond the president to include a whole coterie of yes people who did everything they thought would buttress his leadership and so forth, and he would appreciate it, and he would work better with people, and it's not working. It won't work. He's just not built that way, and he's into deep crisis himself. So he's not functioning outside of what he's accustomed to. He's accustomed to yelling at people. He's accustomed to lying when there's no reason to lie. He's accustomed to cheating, even at golf, for crying out loud. This is a profoundly sick man. And now the Republican Party has to figure out how to get out of this hole, because so much more is resting on the notion that they have control over him, that he's controllable. The evidence is showing you can't control this man. You have to remove him. And that is not a point of vengeance or revenge. It is to save the nation. You have to remove him from the spheres of influence that he occupies. He cannot be allowed certain controls and influences anymore. The damage is profound. And they can't clean it up. It's not one of those things where you come in with a bottle of perfume and you spray it in the air and everything smells good again. This is going to last for decades to come, because he has corrupted the nation in the eyes of other nations. It's not just Americans who are profoundly upset about it, but of course, the whole world is completely disaffected by the United States. What once was a tale of glory, the United States, the ruler of the world, the great champion, and all of that stuff, that was, of course, propaganda. But propaganda is necessary. Everybody engages in it. Every country uses it. But there's propaganda, and then there's propaganda. This president has done a nasty job on his own country. And people now are trying to figure out how much of what they already know, which they reject, how much of it will continue to be true. People who've spent decades in service, people who have acquired their expertise and thought of it as an honorable thing to put it at the disposal of the country, to advance the interests of the country and so forth, they've been reeling. They've taken this to heart. And they're very, very despondent now, because all those years spent in fervent service under both Democratic and Republican regimes, they were devoted not to the presidents at the time serving, they're devoted to the country. And here comes this man with the tact of a person who enters a home that was just totally cleaned with muddy boots. He doesn't care. Somebody will end up having to clean it up. It won't be him. So why should he worry? And that's where we are. We have an almost psychotic president who has been allowed to be psychotic. Who wants to claim responsibility for that? Nobody wants to claim responsibility for that. That I stood by idly doing nothing about what I saw. I talked to nobody. We had no meetings about it. We didn't really confer with each other as to what the appropriate steps are to deal with a situation such as we have. And so it got worse and worse and worse. And now the president is not just a liar and a cheat. He's an extortionist. He's a run-of-the-mill mafia man. And he has recruited a whole bunch of people around him, like Rudolph Giuliani. When you read about the things that they have allegedly done and the ways in which they did it, how they conducted themselves and still are conducting themselves as standard issue thugs with a lot of, quote, legitimate, unquote, power. Now, if the circle was so tight, you can call, you can count, you know, well, there are 20 people who are affected. But for us, as a nation, the entire nation is affected. And it's reached a point where it cannot be ignored because other nations have begun to react. Other nations are expressing their deep disappointment, even anger, that they entrusted certain rights and privileges to the United States, or they thought that they shared certain rights and privileges. And it's not the case. It is a vile, vile thing that this president has done. And getting over it, you don't get over this kind of stuff. He's like an infection. Wherever he goes, he causes chaos and trouble. But then again, this was evident from day one, even before he got into the White House. We now have to question, well, what are the mechanisms that should have kicked in? Certainly by now, to curtail this president, to contain this president. We don't seem to have any answers for that. But we need them. And now, the people have no choice but to play hardball. Why? Because their interests are the ones that get trampled first. And their interests are the ones that get dealt with first. They pay the price. Even if in a military skirmish, Trump's sons and daughters are not going over any place to fight. You know. They get on their private jet and they go someplace where they could chill out for a couple of months. They're wealthy. They're not as wealthy as the wealthy. The people with real wealth, they're not in that category. But what they have to flex their muscles is the power. They have the power, and they have the wealth of the country, which they treat as their own. We're in a very tough spot. We can't get out of it very easily. It will be very ugly, and it would last a long time. The process will last a very long time. What I do notice, though, is that at a time of crisis, when a country looks to all its citizens to participate, to help the country get out of a problem, I see very few people of color at the center of the solution. Very few. They're not wanted there. The attitude is, this does not concern you. And even if it did, we know you do not have the skills and the ability to contribute anything here. We're in charge. We'll take care of it. We'll let you know when it's done. But right now, we really don't need you. I've been noticing it more and more. The absolute and near absolute exclusion of people of color in the decision-making process. So, from that point of view, the Democratic Party is the Republican Party, and the Republican Party is the Democratic Party. Isn't it amazing? It's right there in front of your eyes, and they can't see it. What accounts for the absence or the almost total absence of people of color in just doing, putting something together, putting or being involved in solving the crisis at a pivotal level? Which Latino or African American person or Asian person stands in at the nexus of power in the Democratic Party strategizing? Nope. Nope. You're locked out. Just like in real life. Just like in real life. Something really important is going down that possibly can have a negative effect on all people. And the only people at the table are white, because they were gifted by God to be problem solvers at the highest levels. Nobody else could function at that level. So we are not there. This wonderful democratic country. All of the craziness that is going on isn't caused by them, but impacts them more so than any other communities. But we don't have people at the table making the decisions, formulating policies that could help solve a problem even before it starts. We're not there. We've gone back to being invisible. Millions and millions of us have suddenly become invisible. We cannot formulate, we cannot think. We have nothing to contribute. And certainly we cannot function at that high level. We don't know how to do that. Donald Trump can. And his marginally competent offspring, they can. Absolutely. One little note before we open up the phone lines at 888-874-4888. And that is somewhat good news. It's not fully good news yet, but it's looking like it would be good news. And that is the tentative new labor contract negotiated between General Motors and the Auto Workers Union. If they agree, finally, it's been a month now that they've been on strike. We've talked about it. And finally, it looks like some glimmer of hope exists that this month-long strike will end and 48,000 workers, that's not all the workers, but 48,000 workers who went on strike a month ago would soon be back at work. There's still some issues to iron out, but for the most part, they've dealt with the big issues, and there's agreement there. This was the longest strike at GM since 1970. Why this is important is the United States as a whole has not updated or revamped the way it does things in some areas, very critical areas. We're long past the stage where people should have to go on strike in order to have sit-down meetings and negotiations with their adversaries. That's primitive. We should be at a point where we have an entirely different system that dictates how these things ought to be handled. There was no reason for people to be out in the street and their families affected for a whole month of no paychecks. It means that your negotiation system on both sides, it's old. It needs to be updated. Nobody needs to be out in the streets anymore. That harkens back to an old day, a bygone era. So the work that has to be done once some accord is reached, immediately, especially as it applies to the union, they have to look at new ways of doing business with management in a way that does not always mean that the strikers suffer or that there should even be a strike. It seems to me that we have resources at universities where people can formulate some ideas and put together a system. That's the word I'm looking for. A system when management and workers disagree about whatever. It should not mean automatically that the workers are in the street and they're not getting paid and their families are suffering and the bills don't stop. We have reached a point where new approaches need to be worked out. They need not be so brutal. They need not be so punitive. All you need to focus on, it seems to me, is reaching a point of effective negotiation and dialogue while things can continue and people can continue to earn their wages. But we're still in that old world, and many sectors of our economy are still operating that way. People out in the blazing sun, fainting in the sun, households that are going without paychecks and don't qualify for public assistance because the time period is too short. So it's a lot of needless suffering, it seems to me. And I can't help but think that the time has come to throw out some of the old ways of doing things and putting in place new methods that would be far more productive. I understand some people are tied psychologically to the notion that a strike means, you know, you're in the streets, you've got your placards, all that other stuff, all the symbolisms. But it's time to go beyond that and figure out a patent, if you will, for how you approach negotiating during a strike, so that the people who need it most don't also end up suffering the most. A couple more things that I wanted to talk about, but these were some of the main ones. So we'll take a break right here, right now, and come back to your thoughts on these topics or any related topics at 888-874-4888 right after this. Just a little bit of soul. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the lines are open for your input at 888-874-4888. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling fine. Thank you for asking. How are you, Jay?
I'm good. I hope you have your lentil today and enjoy it.
Thank you.
You know, it's at the point, honestly, where it becomes more the theater of the absurd every day in dealing with this guy in the Oval Office. I mean, it becomes more of an embarrassment. It becomes more clear that the man is not only not fit for the job, he should have never, in all truthfulness, been placed in the job. And in the process, like you said earlier, the damage that he's doing is going to be felt for many, many years to come. And the tragedy is that he may be reelected. Because after that dog and pony show that they showed on Tuesday, it's very clear to anybody that could see, and to even the late Ray Charles, that the Democrats have nothing to offer to remove him from office. And the sad thing is, they don't even have the ability to form a strategy to move him from office if they would just say, we're going to do it through the Electoral College, like how he won. To go to the key states. Right. To go to the key states and build the movement and to do the necessary things to make sure that he doesn't win those states again. It's just tragic. I mean, his behavior becomes more and more erratic every day, but all you do is hear people talk about what they should do to address and deal with it. But they're not doing anything about it. I mean, the vote should have already been had in regards to impeaching him. Then, you know, we will really see where we're at. I mean, you know, you talk about what happened yesterday with Pelosi. You know, the most frightening thing out of all of that is, like you spoke briefly of earlier, there were no people of color there. To me, I didn't see anybody of color sitting there. And that's the tragedy. You know, from either side, from the Democratic side nor the Republican side, did I see any person of color. You know what I mean? So that shows you, in all honesty, we don't really have no say-so in what's going on. You know, a tragedy is we just lost Brother Cummings today. You know, much respect to the brother for the hard work that he's done. But you know, one of the things that I notice, and some may think that it's petty, but it just goes to show you where we're at in this country, where white people cannot, after all of these years, figure out who is John Lewis and who is Cummings. You know what I mean? How do you show a picture of John Lewis and say that that's Elijah Cummings? I mean, at 2019.
It happens all the time.
I mean, it's embarrassing.
It happens all the time. But your point is well taken. Your point is well taken.
It's totally disrespectful.
Plural. Your point's plural. Thanks, Jay, for getting us started today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
I want to weigh in on the last item that you mentioned, the strike at General Motors. What this makes me think about is the nature of the system that we're in. We're in a corporate capitalist system that is in effect in this country. And the job of a system such as that is to do one thing, to extract the labor of those people who create the product, whatever it is they're going to create, and first of all, make a profit for those people who run the corporate capitalist system that is in operation at any particular company that is in that system of capitalism. So that's the very nature of the system. So if we get in our mind that, you know, we should sit down the workers and the capitalists together and, you know, nicely work out a deal, that doesn't really make sense to me, because that's not the system we're in. We're in a system where those in power, that is the corporate capitalist side of the argument, that are extracting the raw material and the labor of the workers for maximum profit, and slave wages or less from those people who do the work, and you know, that is the system that we're in. So this is a natural system. Now, if you were thinking about something that would be fair, we have a cooperative system where the companies that produce whatever needs to be produced are cooperative companies that are run on a democratic basis, that give the workers a correct wage or salary, and provide the management that has a reasonable salary on the other end. But under the capitalism that we have working in the United States, not everywhere, that is not the case. So it's a expectation that, to me, would not work. It's no different than expecting the man-eating tiger to become a vegetarian. So that's my position on it, right there. You see, that's one thing I have to say.
And I should make it clearer, is that tactics need to be upgraded. Methods need to be upgraded on the part of the workers. We know what the owners and the industrialists will do. But I'm talking about from the point of view of the unions and the workers, I think they need to revisit their tactics. They need to upgrade their tactics.
I agree. I agree because it seems to me that the major union movements are supporting the very side of the duopoly with the Republicans and Democrats. Most of them are reporting supporting the Democrat side. That's like you joining in with the oppressor in a political situation and thinking that your oppressor is going to function in such a way as for your own benefit. So as long as people keep saying, well, the better of two evils, so we'll take the Democrats, which is really a party of Republican right, then you want to get nowhere. People have to get past the idea of maintaining these capitalist corporations that run the country and doing something about that. There's no chance I see of changing them into benevolent, nice people who do things fair and square for everyone. The other thing I just want to mention quickly, because I value your time, is that, you know, Congressman Cummings, I'd like to know what his positions were on certain things. What was his position with Obama's attack on Libya? What was his position on Venezuela? What is his position was on the maintenance of an apartheid state in Palestine, Israel? So I'd like to know a little more about him. So that's what I had to contribute today. And I've been thinking about that issue with the unions, and that's what's on the top of my mind today.
Well, that's a lot on your mind today. And thank you for sharing it and calling in. Well, that brings us almost to the end of our program today. And I wanted to just use a couple of the remaining minutes to get a couple of things off my mind. This is great that we gather and we exchange thoughts. But let's try and put our thoughts into action a little bit. Just pick one project. It doesn't have to be a whole bunch of things. Pick one project and figure out what you can do and what you want to do to make things better. And then you start. It doesn't have to be a big, momentous thing with a marching band and lots of bells and whistles. In fact, I hope it wouldn't be something like that. You want to move quietly, but effectively and consistently. That's how you build. I talk all the time about reclaiming communities and reclaiming ourselves, actually. And this is how we do it, very quietly. No fanfare. But make it a point that you do something, that we don't just talk, that we put into action some measure, a considerable measure of what we believe, put it into practice. It may not work. That's the other thing. Most efforts don't work, even though people try. And there are all kinds of reasons for that. But that is not reason enough to not giving things a try. A good idea backed up by some muscle and consistency will yield something, and we need it very badly right now. Because what's coming down the road isn't all that pretty. And we will be in even greater peril if we don't get busy about doing something that addresses itself to saving our communities. We really must develop that kind of attitude. And however much or however little you can do, as long as you do, that's important. Thanks so much for listening today. Tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday, and I'm expecting some serious minds being freed tomorrow. We'll be prepared for you. And thanks so much for listening today. Bye-bye. Keep on pushing.